So we were talking about Avos Hashem, right? And Avos Hashem, we said, is basically based upon that we showed from the Rambam. It's basically based upon it's an emotional experience which results from knowledge, right? That the person gains knowledge, so they're drawn to the source of that knowledge. Right, they're drawn to the source of that knowledge. Hi. A person, as they gain knowledge, is drawn to the source of their knowledge, and they're attached, a strong attachment of their personality to find, to know this source. Okay, and it's a strong emotion, but it's based upon the knowledge which one attains. And there's another Rambam where he talks about a few other Rambams. I just thought I should read, because I think they're relevant to the question we asked. And so the question came up is, why can't, you know, we have the knowledge, but then go with the emotion a little bit, you know, beyond, separate from the knowledge. And we kind of, I mentioned the Rambam, but I think it's worth looking at a little bit. So there's a Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva. Okay, so kind of Tshuva, a little, yeah, so Tshuva. Hilchos Tshuva, so it's, I'm just picking a few points, but it says, Perek Yod Halacha Gimel. He says, Ketzad hi ha'ava haruya. What is the appropriate ava? Okay, what is the appropriate level of Ava? Hu sheyevas Hashem Ahava gedola yisera rabba aza ad meod. You should love Hashem, a great, extra, a lot, strong, very love. Okay, there's a lot of adjectives there. I'm just translating them, but it doesn't really, you know, maybe you could write a better English sentence than the way it's translated, but he's using a lot of adjectives. Adjite nafsho keshura ba'ahavas Hashem, until your soul, your nefesh is attached to the Avas Hashem, v'nimsa shoge batamid, and it turns out you're like involved in it always. Ki ilu chole ha'ava, as if someone who loves it. She'in daitam penuya me'avas osa isha, like a man who is their mind is not clear from the love of this woman. That's all they're thinking about all day long. She shoge batamid, right? Always thinking about it. Be'mishifto be'mikuma, whether they're sitting, whether they're standing. Be'mishashu ochal v'shoso, they're eating or drinking. Right? Totally a person is like the idea of someone who's like lovesick. It's a mashal. Someone who's totally in love. Always thinking about the particular woman. Says, yes, sir, mizati avas Hashem le'vavav. Even more than that is avas Hashem in the heart of someone who's a real ohev Hashem. Shoge batamid. Always involved in it. Kamosh tzivanu b'chol avavcha b'chol nafshcha b'chol modecha. You should love God with all your heart and all your soul and all your money. Because that's what Shlomo HaMelech said as a mashal, that I am lovesick. Cholas ava, sick. It's in English, but it's Hebrew also. And all Shir Shirim is about this. It's a mashal of the love relationship between Chayishel and God. It's talking about our love for God, which is the reason why I use this mashal, because it has, that's what it's saying, that we talked about last week, the reason why it's called ava, and what's similar to ava, even though you don't relate to God the same as you relate to a person, but the constancy, the draw of the person to God, and the total involvement of the personality in a full, total, all their energy. That's how it's similar to love. Okay? So far, so good? Okay. So that's not really clear so far what causes that. I mean, here just talking about the intensity of the experience of Avos Hashem. Okay. It's interesting, he says more than that. Didn't you notice that? He says, like, a guy who's in love is like, all, every single second, always thinking about the woman. She says, love of God is more than that. How could it be more? There's really no room left over, right? It's a good question, right? I just kind of noticed it now. You haven't have any idea about that? Or any other question, right? How could it be more? It doesn't sound like there's any. It sounds like it's a 24/7 type of a thing. So Rachel's saying maybe it means deeper. He's giving a mashal to show you the quantity, how you're always, always involved. But then he's saying, "Is that's just the mashal. In the time, maybe it's the same because it's always. But the ava isn't the same thing because it's deeper, because it relates to more of the deeper part of the personality, more underlying part of the person. Right? Their committed, their attachment is based upon like something more concrete and more deep. Could be it means that. I thought also maybe it means even a person who's lovesick. It's not maybe it's not as all-consuming. I mean, it says always, but it doesn't really mean always. It's not like 24/7. Like, I mean, there's other things in life. I mean, even though he says when you eat and when you drink, but I don't know if it really is like mamish on the same level. Like, it could be he means he's showing you like how intense it is, but maybe there is room for more. You know, like perhaps it's not. I don't know. That's a good question. Is that really every single second of the day a person's thinking like that? I don't know. Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
Maybe it's like every spare second you're thinking of that person, but with Torah, it's not like every spare second. It's just everything.
Right, you mean spare second, you mean you have other stuff.
Like when you're not focusing on something.
Right.
Then you're thinking of that person. But
right. Right.
More. Like even when
right.
you're focusing on something else, you can't.
Right. 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 That's kind of like I'm thinking also,
yeah.
Right. Right answer, you mean. Yeah. Okay, good. Someone else? Were you going
to
say something?
I guess to that point also, though, because like Torah has the capacity of taking up every.
Mm-hmm.
Element of your being, but
right.
like other human being, you're always going to have your sense of independence or
self. Self, right.
It's not going to go away.
Right.
The reality of that doesn't go away, but with
right.
Hashem and with Torah,
right.
you can get rid of the
right.
self part of
it. Because yeah, ultimately, it's like stems from the self, the love of the person. It's like your emotions, and there's the self is still there. But you're saying it's like when you get the knowledge, it's like you're. It gets to the Yira, but it could be it makes you so small and feel so small that it's like you just lose the self. That's what I'm saying, right?
You would eventually lose yourself, right?
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's what gets to Yira, is you realize how small you are. That's, I mean, we have to get to that. That's the other part of it. But maybe. That's a good point. Yeah. When you get to Yira, let's see. But it's worth, I think we're saying good stuff, but I think it would be worth maybe, you know, clarifying. Maybe as we go a little more. Okay, but let's hold the thing, you know, hold the question. There are a bunch of good ideas out here. Okay, now here's one other thing I want to read. The next Rambam says like this: W Barer. It's clear and known. Shein Avas Hakadosh Baruch Hu. This is Alachavav. Shein Avas Hakadosh Baruch Hu Niksharas Belibo Shel Adam. That the love of God does not become tied into a person's heart. Ad Sheyishke Batamid Karoi. Until you involve yourself in it always. Appropriately. You appropriately involve yourself on a constant basis. V'yazov kol shiva olam chutz mimenu, and you leave everything in the world besides for it. It takes like a certain strong push towards Avas Hashem. K'moshe tziv amar b'chol avavcha b'chol nafshecha. Okay, with all your heart and all your soul. Ela b'deya she'edehu. It comes through the knowledge that you know him. V'al piha deya al piha ava. And in accord, the amount of the knowledge is the amount of the love. If it's a little, it's a little. It's a lot, it's a lot. So the level of a person's ava follows proportionally to the level of their knowledge. Okay, if you can't have more love than your knowledge, nor can you have less. Right? He's saying it goes both ways. Therefore, a person should single themselves, direct themselves to understand the knowledge and the knowledges and the chachmos that give him knowledge of God. According to a person's abilities, right? Every person has their own ability, so it doesn't. A person, this thing is subject to variations of degree, right? Every person can have knowledge on their level, and saying in accordance with your level. You can have the Abba. Okay, fine. So you see here, he's saying it's a proportionate thing. Okay, it goes together with the knowledge. You can't get to a certain point and then let your emotion go beyond your knowledge. It doesn't work that way. Okay. Now I think maybe we could try to clarify why that is. Okay, why is it that there's this ratio? You know, why can't your emotion get beyond, you know, beyond your knowledge? Why is it that there's this, like, cap, so to speak? Right, we kind of talked about it last week, but maybe we could clarify a little bit more. Does anyone want to add something or think about it for a moment? Yes, Sarah?
Maybe that can't, I guess, love something if it doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so, the more you learn about it, the more it makes sense, the more you can love.
Okay, good. Well, what about, like, maybe I'm going to push you to clarify a little bit, because, like, you can love a person, even though they may not make sense, right?
I guess, but it's not like a person.
Right.
It's not like unconditional love.
Right.
It's not that type of thing.
Mm-hmm, right.
It's, you have to to know it to want to learn it.
Right.
You have to
right.
learn some of it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Keep going to
mm-hmm.
want to learn more.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Good point. Okay, someone else?
Well, emotions aren't a stable basis for anything.
Okay.
So, no, you have one emotion one day, but what happens when it's gone the next day? You know, like,
right.
do you stop loving?
Right.
Whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
So you need, like, some basis for that.
Right.
To
understand.
Be able to
right.
cool it out.
Right, that's a good point.
That basis is always going to be there.
Right. That's a good point.
So that's the knowledge here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, what about at that moment? Okay, so tomorrow I'm not going to love God, let's say. But what about right now? Right now the emotion is on. So then what about then? You know? Are you hearing what I'm asking?
Yeah, I hear.
Yeah. There's a, are you going to say something? Or
I was going to say
like
something
it?
Different.
Okay,
I
different.
Do you want to finish this,
okay.
this line of question?
Okay. Do you have an answer to my question? Or do you want to think about
it? I'm thinking about it.
Okay. So think about it and we'll come back. Yes, yeah, so it's something different.
I was just thinking if we're going to define Ahava as kind of the desire to, I guess, be with God or to know God more, then you
right.
have to build on what you already know. And you, like, I mean, you see when you learn things, you learn something, and then you see that there's more that you don't know. And
right.
if that's, like, if the whole idea of Ahavas Hashem is the desire to get to know more, like, those two things are really the same.
And then it's tied in with your knowledge.
Yeah.
But why can't you just, like, conjure up an emotion to get to know him more? You know, like, I know him X, but now I'll somehow, let's say, sing a song or whatever emotional experience it will be, that will try to give me a little bit of an extra oomph.
To me, and I guess I'm coming at it from the other way, where, like, the more you learn, the more you're going to want to learn.
I understand. I understand what you mean. Right, I understand what you mean. And the more of the wisdom that you see, the more amazing it is, the awesomeness of the view, that the more drawn you are to the thing, right? Like if you get a glimpse of some scene, some mountain scene or some beautiful scene, so you get a tiny glimpse, then you say, wow, I want to see that. But the more you see of it, the more you're drawn in by it. Just in the greater Chacham is going to see more and is going to be drawn, it's going to look much more beautiful to him, he's going to be more drawn to gain even further. So the higher you get, the more you're drawn to that knowledge.
The more you know that there is more to know.
Right, exactly. I mean, simple person doesn't realize how beautiful and how amazing this knowledge is, and therefore they're not drawn that much. The more you see, the more your eyes are opened up to the great wisdom, and then you're drawn to it. You become sort of attached to it in a different way. And it's then the more you see, the more you get, the more you know, the more you want more.
Basically.
That's good. That's a good explanation. So you're not addressing why the emotions can't do it, but you're explaining well how it works. That's a good point. Okay, that's very good. Okay, someone else? So, maybe to answer this, let's digress a little bit. Okay, digression from the... So, if I have to ask you, what Avera is the Torah the most against? What does it talk about against the most?
Vodzah.
Right? Now, if you'd have to tell me, what is the main difference between Avodah Zarah and, let's say, Avodah Hashem, God? So, in a nutshell, one sentence or so. What's the main difference between worship of idols and worship of God? Worship of,
Your thoughts.
What's that?
Your thoughts.
Your thoughts, okay. A little more specific.
You need to have the correct mindset in order to be Avodah Hashem.
Okay.
But, like, anything that strays from the mindset.
Okay. Okay, good. So here's what I'm looking for. Okay, but you're saying good, but here's what I'm looking for. Avodah Zarah is blank, and Avodah Hashem is blank, or something like that, you know?
Avodah Hashem is connecting.
Connecting.
And then Avodah Hashem is separating. As Avodah Zarah is separating. So.
Connecting what and separating what? What do you mean by connecting?
Performing a connection to God.
Oh, I understand. Separating. Okay, good. But they'll say they're connecting to their gods. Right? Mm-hmm. That's what idolaters are going to say. We're connecting. You're connecting. We're connecting. We're connecting to... You're connecting to your Jewish God. We're connecting to our whatever God. Right? So I'm saying...
So we're connecting to MS.
Good. And they're connecting to...
Nothingness.
Not MS. Nothingness. Okay, good. Nothingness. As I say, the difference is that Torah, is, Hashem and Torah is true, and their Avodah Zarah is false. Torah is against Avodah Zarah because it's false. And it's made up. It's imaginary. Okay, the idea is we recognize that God, our attachment to God and our service of God is because analysis and study leads one to see that God is true. And whether it be knowing Torah Sinai, or whether it be knowing studying the Chachma in the universe, studying seeing the Chachma in the Torah, whatever route it is that a person sees knowledge and sees that God is true, there is a source to the universe, there is a source to the Torah, there is great wisdom in the Torah. But God is true, and God is real. And that's, Avodas Hashem is based upon that premise. Avodas Zarah, their starting point isn't, give me a proof that Jesus is true, or something like that. That's not the way they work. They say, it doesn't make sense, I'm of faith, I'm going to believe it, I want it to be the case. Like this whole, certain religions will say more than others about how much they're just believing things because they want them to be. But the idea is that the reason why the Torah is against the Torah holds that it's always, Avodah Zarah is always believing in something which isn't true, but the person to satisfy your desires, your wishes, your emotions. You want security. You want to know that there's a God who loves you, will protect you, who's watching over your shoulder, who's like a parent, who's gonna, like that type of a childish situation. You want to get back to that type of a situation, so you create a God who will take care of you, and you set up some sort of services and whatever form of self-sacrifice to that God, and in turn return that God will give you stuff, and you make up all kinds of whatever religion makes up their own different things. But the problem with it, and this is why the Torah is against it essentially, is because it's wrong. It's false. It's just totally worshiping yourself. It's like you have your own wishes and your own emotions, and you're projecting those wishes onto reality. You have a fear of lightning, so you make a lightning god who protects you against lightning or whatever. However, different religions, if you study them, are based upon, if you'd study psychology, you'd see where these different aspects of any given idolatry come from. Because they emerge from the personality, from within the person. But Avodas Hashem is about undoing that. Torah says you gotta, in your worship of, in your religious sphere, you gotta forget about your wishes. God doesn't exist because you wish him to exist. You may wish God that there's a God, that doesn't mean there's gonna be a God. It happens to be that there is a God, and that's great, we're happy about that. But the reason why we worship God is because he's true. And a good thing which we say every day summarizes this thing. And it says, it's in Aleinu. You say, perhaps you're aware of this. It says, we say, Shehem Ishtachavim, Lahavel Varek Mispalim, El Lo Yoshia. They vow and they pray to a God that does not help them. Okay, to nothing, God of nothingness, which does not help them. Yoshia, doesn't save them, doesn't help them. Vanachnu Korim, and we bow, so you'd think, what should be the converse? We should say, and we bow to God that does save us. Right? We don't say that. We say, to the King of Kings, he spreads forth the earth. And we basically talk about he's the creator, he's the source of all existence and all that. We don't say, they bow to nothing that doesn't help them, we bow to something real which helps us. It's nothing to do with helps us. They are looking for a God that helps them. Their God and their worship, they make up gods to help them, but they don't help them. They're not real, they're made up, so obviously they don't help them. We worship God because he is the Notesh Ram Yosef Aratz, because he's the creator of the world, not because he helps us. So their idea is our pursuit of God and our acceptance of God, our worship of God, is based on an acceptance of truth. And we submit to the reality, whether we like it or we don't. Now, we may like it at times, but that's not what our submission is. Our submission is to truth. But in idolatry, it's basically a worship of your own emotions or of the things of your own imaginations, which are projected onto the outside reality. Okay, so far so good? Mm-hmm. Okay. So, that being the case, Avodas Hashem is worship of God who exists, who truly exists. And that's the God that we can't feel that God exists. Every religious person in the world feels that God exists, but he just feels that way, and he's just wishing that that's the case, and he's imagining that that's the case. It's not true. So it's not based on anything. Now, even if you happen to be Jewish, insofar as you just are wishing that God is there and you're feeling that He's there, but you don't. It's not grounded in what the Torah's idea of God is grounded in. Like Ata Hares Al Adas, you are shown to know. Ki Hashem Elokim Eden Levado. So the Torah is based upon, Sina is based upon a God of, that we know and we relate to through, not through wishing, but through our knowledge. So therefore, insofar as we have knowledge, we perceive God. Insofar as we turn off our knowledge or stop our knowledge and just try to put that on the side for a little bit and try to get into some sort of emotional frenzy, then we're going away from the God of the Torah and from our idea of the God that we know exists, and now we're trying to conjure up those emotions and those imaginations that we imagine God sitting on our shoulder very close to us when we're in that type of emotional state. So we're stepping away, and I'm not saying that's of Avodah or anything, but I'm saying we're stepping away from the idea of Avas Hashem, from the idea of our idea of God, and we're just turning towards our emotions and we're turning inwards. Instead of looking outwards and relating to a God that exists, we're kind of bringing up God from our emotions. In what way am I singing to God? What way am I even relating to God? Because I feel that God is very close to me. But that feeling is the one when the moment I put aside the Gemaras or put aside the learning and put aside the ideas and I, you know, get those emotions rolling, then I'm turning away from mind. But there is a combination where a person could be involved in both. You know what I'm talking about? Where there is in Torah a precedent that there is such a thing as where a person is involved in the ideas, but there's also the emotions that are going along with it. You know, that moves the person in that type of a way.
Shira.
Shira, exactly. Exactly. Shira. There's a phenomenon of Shira, for instance, Shirei David. David HaMelech sang with music of the harp, and he played music and sang the ideas in Tehillim, right? And this idea of Shira and the Mikdash, those are together with the Karbon, they're singing, the Levim are singing Shira, and they're playing music. And that's an experience which moves the emotions, or Az Yashir. When they saw the Kriyas Yam Suf, they were emotionally, there's emotional outpouring, they're moved, but they started expressed ideas of Az Yashir. Of ideas about God, which they were moved towards. But it was an emotional expression, there was song. So the emotions could be there, and a person can be involved in singing. There is an idea that a person's entire self, the full, all their mind and their emotions are totally involved in the worship of God and the recognition of God. And it's like an event like, it's like Kriyas Yam Suf, it's not just an intellectual, wow, God exists, I realize the idea. But it moves your emotions, it's an amazing, astounding event. You know, and the person, David HaMelech HaShlomo talks about how they're emotionally drawn to the Torah, and it's a powerful emotional experience. So there's an idea of Shira, which involves both parts of the personality. But the important part of it, and this is, I think, what's oftentimes mistaken for it, is that David HaMelech and Klal Yisrael and Az Yashir were tied in with the ideas. So there's a singing, or there's an emotionalism, but the emotionalisms are part of they go along together with the mind and with the ideas. So the emotion is tied together as a natural counterpart of the ideas that a person's thinking about. So I would think that if a person were to be involved in singing or in that type of a thing, and they're thinking about the concepts, which are Psukim, or I'm Psukim, whatever, putting aside the probably the same Psukim issue, but, you know, thinking about ideas in Zemiros, for instance, Zemiros on Shabbos, you could be thinking about ideas about singing about that are in Zemiros about Shabbos and the Yom of Shabbos, and that could, you know, there are good ideas in the songs, and you could think about the songs, and they could move your emotions towards God. But I think in general, there's a danger of loose dropping that, because there is a draw of the emotions, and the emotions are in a certain sense fettered or, you know, bound up, bothered by having to think. You don't want to think. It kind of waters down the emotional experience. Emotional experiences get more into it if you could stop thinking for a little bit. Thinking kind of, you know, so it could dull it. But they're saying there is such a thing. That's what I said. It's not, I don't think we should say all singing or all emotions are bad, but they have their place. I just think oftentimes, especially nowadays, it's hard to know what a person's doing internally. You have to, you know, can't really know what other people do. But you know, the thing, oftentimes you get the feeling that the thing is, you know, people aren't that tied in with the ideas, you know, so there is, I just wanted to bring out, it's not, there is a place for that type of a thing, but it's as a component of a pursuit of knowledge. Question? Any questions? Okay, another point I wanted to mention, a few other points I wanted to mention based on last week before we move towards this week, is that I don't think it should be, maybe some people get the impression that this idea of Avas Hashem as knowledge, the knowledge-centered idea. Oh, by the way, I didn't finish my point, but that's why I think it's Avas Hashem is in line with the person's knowledge, right? Because the love, anytime, I said this, right? Anytime it's going beyond that is stepping out of the God of your mind and is just trying to bring it, you know, to just, you're going towards a different God, so to speak. It can't be. Okay. Now, and that's good with the Miriam's point, is that the way we relate to God is through knowledge, and therefore it's your draw to God has to be through knowledge. Otherwise, what are you doing? You're not tying to God. You're just tying to some imaginary thing. Okay. Now, some may think that this idea that knowledge, Avas Hashem, is through knowledge, is the Rambam. Right? That's sometimes what's, you know, that's the Rambam's position, and Rambam was a rationalist, or that kind of thing, you know? So I looked around on the Pasuk, just after Yisrael Lekecha. Is one of those a Chumash? Do I have a Chumash? Is Chumash with Rashi? No. There's got to be. There's one in the room here. We got one. Here's one. There we go. No, that's not what I want. So it's on the Pasuk of, it's a Pasuk in Shema. How do we say it? Shema Yisrael Shema Yisrael Chol Rav Tei Shema Kala Vachol Vachol Nafshecha V'hayu Advaram Ha'il Hashem Kim Tzav Chayim Al Vavecha. Right, so love God with all your heart and all your soul and all your money. And then we say V'hayu Advaram Ha'il Hashem Kim Tzav Chayim Al Vavecha, that these words, the words of Torah, should be on your heart. So the Gevurah, it's a Rashi. Rashi quoted in Chazal, though. It's a Sifri. It's an old source. It says Umahu Ha'ava. What's this love? Because through the through these words of Torah, you recognize God and you cleave to His ways. Okay, so it's basically, it's a Rashi, but it's a Medrash, the Sifri, which is it's the Pasuk. How? That's the Mesorah is telling us that's how you read these Pesukim. They're not just two random Pesukim. You should love God and then a separate thing. You should know these words. That's how you do it. What is the love? The knowledge. Because through that, because that's how you recognize God. You can't recognize, there's no other way. There's no other way to have a love of God if it's not through the Dvarim Ha'ilah, if it's not through the knowledge. Okay, so it's an open... This is Pesukim, and it's a Medrash, and it's a Sifri, and it's Rashi. And I looked also, I was looking on the 11 Mefarshim, I didn't see anyone contradict it, they didn't really talk about it, at least the Mefarshim and the Chumash. But the Sefer Chinuch also is very interesting. If you want to look at the Sefer Chinuch, you know, where he talks about the mitzvah Avas Hashem, he also spells out, like the Rambam, a little more, a little different, you know, but basically the same idea. He talks about how Avas Hashem is tied in with, you know, with the person's knowledge. Okay, you can probably find this if you want. But it's in the Sefer Chinuch is organized in according to the Parshios in the Torah, so it's in Beis Chaim. So if you want to look at it, but it's another source. I'm just saying, I don't think it should be, you know, people should have the impression this is a Rambam thing. It's a Mesorah thing. It's just, you know, which is often the case. You know, that type of thing. Now, just another point. Remember, we asked the question: how can you mandate an emotion? I remember that question. How could you have this? So we said, is that it's a natural result of a person's gaining knowledge. Right? A person gains knowledge, then he has the, he brings forth the emotion of, you know, just naturally, the emotion comes along, you know? So I mentioned that there's Einstein, you know, that he had, did I mention Einstein? That he's a person who's, who saw knowledge, and insofar as he saw knowledge, he had an experience similar to Ava, you know, which almost exactly what Avas Hashem, you know, described. And I remember there's a story. I think Rabbi was once arguing with someone. This is not, so the story goes, he's arguing with someone like whether a guy like Einstein would be Yotze the Mitzvah of Avas Hashem, you know, because he's someone who saw the Chachma of the universe, and he express sentiments similar to you know, the Rambam describing Avas Hashem, you know. And I think it was the story they went to the they were arguing about. I think it was Rav Moshe or the Rav, I can't remember. I think it was Rav Moshe Feinstein, and they asked him, and he said, "Yeah, that's definitely." You know, so I have this book here of quotes by Einstein. So I just wanted to read you. There's a bunch of quotes which are really interesting, but there were two quotes. Oh, I lost the page. Two quotes which I thought were very good that express this, and you'll see they also, we didn't read about Yiras Hashem, but they also express this, that idea of Yiras Hashem. Okay, this is one. Yeah, the scientist is possessed by a sense of universal causation. His religious feeling takes the form of a rapturous amazement at the harmony of natural law, which reveals an intelligence of such superiority that compared with it, all the systematic thinking and acting of human beings is utterly insignificant reflection. It is beyond question closely akin to that which has possessed the religious geniuses of all ages. So, right, and he's like a rapturous amazement by the harmony of the laws, you know? And there's one other. And this, you'll see, he says about how man feels utterly insignificant. We'll see in the Rambam. That's the way he describes about Yira. Yira is that kind of a thing. There's one other one, which is... you know, he wasn't a guy. He didn't believe in the Torah. Einstein, so I'm not saying that everything he says we agree with. If he didn't know. He didn't know about Sinai, and he didn't know about the, you know. But I'm just saying this idea of Avas Hashem is something which, I'm bringing this in to support the point that it's a natural experience, that he didn't believe in the Torah. It's not like the Torah told him about this experience. It's just an experience when a person sees wisdom. That's it. So he's just moved by that. Okay. I don't know the exact quote, but the other quote is basically, there's another quote. I mean, there's a bunch of quotes like this, but there's another quote that said basically the same point. Okay, yes.
If it's, I mean, back to the question of, like, how can we all be given a mitzvah for us?
Yeah.
So we don't need the mitzvah, then it's natural.
Oh, well, the mitzvah, that's a good point. That's a good question. So, does someone want to answer that?
Well, I would say that's, it's not that Torah is mandating an emotion. I think that because that's the only real concrete intellectual thing that you can have.
Right.
So that's really the only emotion that you would naturally have.
But Haley's question is, so what's the mitzvah, though? Like, what am I supposed to do?
Like, I'm saying, like, I know, but, like, I'm coming to another side.
Okay. So what? So are you answering, or?
No, I'm not answering.
Oh, okay. I understand. Okay. I hear you. Yeah? Is that
I don't know if I was about to just say what it was about to say, but I think what it is that it's a mitzvah to learn about what is God.
Right. That's what I'm saying. It follows from the knowledge. So the mitzvah is to pursue the knowledge in a way that will lead to that. In other words, that's what he says. You have to devote yourself towards, you know, towards the knowledge and towards being, you know, things which will bring you towards that. You know what I mean? So, and then the emotion is, you know, the fulfillment of the mitzvah, so to speak, but often we call the kiyama mitzvah, isn't in this, the not the knowledge per se, but it's in the ahava which results from that learning. But the maisa, the way you do it, is through the learning, through involving yourself in the you know.
Is that a common, like, configuration of the way that the mitzvah will be called?
Yes.
Like,
yes.
The name of the mitzvah will be.
Yes, I'm sure you mean. But not the action. Yes, I think it could be. That's a good question. I mean, the problem is if you're going to call it by the action, then action is going to be learning. So there's a different action of mitzvah for learning. You know what I mean? So here, the essence of the mitzvah is Avas Hashem. It's just that the root to Avas Hashem is through the knowledge. So the to differentiate the mitzvah, that's what the essence of the mitzvah is Avas Hashem. So that's like a means. You know, the means is the knowledge, is the learning. You know what I mean? So to call the mitzvah learning is going to miss the essence. You know, the point of the mitzvah.
Oh wait, especially since there's also a mitzvah
talmud. Yeah, right. That's what I'm saying. Mitzvah talmud also.
No, the mitzvah is connecting to emes.
Yes.
Sushim emes.
Yes.
Right.
Exactly.
So that's.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, that's the answer. It's to search for that, and then when you do search for it, then you're going to have that emotion.
Right.
But the mitzvah is to pursue that and to connect to it, direct yourself towards that pursuit.
Right, so
no question. No, there's no question anymore. That was the question. You already got it.
Okay.
Okay. You got the answer before the question. But the question was, what's the mitzvah if it's a natural emotion that comes over? Harko, the question was, if it's an emotion that naturally happens when a person has knowledge, what's the mitzvah? It just naturally happens.
Right.
So the answer is, the mitzvah is to pursue the knowledge so that you will have the emotion. But the mitzvah isn't the pursuit. The mitzvah is called ahava and not called pursuing knowledge, because the essence of the fulfillment is the ahava, which results from that pursuit.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Correct. Another point I just thought of, but I forgot. Okay. Okay, good. Any further points? Any further questions? Okay. So now let's look at Yiras Hashem. Okay? Let's look at Yiras Hashem. And if you remember, this is what the Rashba, tying things back, we were in the davening, there was an idea that the Rashba was talking about how davening is about Yira. The Hasidim Rishonim used to focus an hour before the davening, so they'd have the right kavanos. They have Yiras Hashem, so that's kind of why we came here. They really came here for Yira, not for Ava. But because he doesn't talk about Ava in the context of Tefillah, he talks about Yira. So we said, well, what does Yira mean? And if you remember, we talked about it. There's an idea of fear of punishment, and then there's an idea of awe. Right? That's what we came to. That Yira here must not mean fear of punishment, but it means awe. So the Rambam talked about the mitzvah of Ahava, and Ahava comes when a person sees the great wisdom of great wisdom in the Torah. Oh, this was my point. I'm sorry. The point is, you said the mitzvah of the separate mitzvah of Talmud Torah. Right, that was the Miriam's point. So the mitzvah is interesting because the mitzvah of Talmud Torah is who's obligated in the mitzvah of Talmud Torah?
Everyone.
Man. Who's obligated in the mitzvah of Ahava Hashem? Everyone. So Talmud Torah is a mitzvah, particularly of like the Mesorah, of maintaining the corpus of the Torah, you know, for generations, keeping the Mesorah in line, and that's a role which men are obligated in. They must do that. That's a mitzvah, and they're chayav in doing that. And women are not obligated in doing that. But that's like maintaining the system of the Mesorah. That's a certain role and a responsibility and an obligation. Man has to. You can't say I don't want to learn. You have to learn, you have to maintain the Torah. That role was given, or that obligation was given to man. But the Avas Hashem, which is a person's pursuit of knowledge for the sake of being drawn to the truth, pursuit of truth, and being drawn to another God and the source of that knowledge, is a personal mitzvah, which has nothing to do with this. It's not the system, it's a personal mitzvah, and it's not relegated man or woman, that's just a human being. So a human being, whether it's a man or a woman, is equally enjoined to pursue the God and pursue knowledge, whether it be through Torah or it be through science or it be through, you know, whatever it is. Like, for instance, a certain way to look at it is, like, a man can't just say, I'm just going to study science. He has to study Torah. He's obligated to keep the Mesorah going, and he has a mitzvah. He's obligated to, because if every man's going to say that, we're not going to have a Torah. You know, a woman has a right to say that. So she's not commanded to maintain the Torah. It's not her, that's going to be done by the man. And a woman could say, I have an inclination towards science, towards biology, towards physics, towards whatever. And she could say, I think I'll gain more Avas Hashem through that. You know, and the person has to, you know, see where their strength is or whatever. But there's no mitzvah that a woman has to study Gemara and Baba Kama or whatever it is, study the halachic system. You know, so that's why I thought it was just saying there are two different mitzvahs. There's a mitzvah of Talmud Torah, and then there's Avas Hashem. They're different. You know, and the clear difference is just in who's obligated. Okay, is there a question on that? Okay, so now back to Yira. So the Rambam says again, Avas Hashem is where a person sees the knowledge and they're drawn to that great source of that knowledge. Then the Rambam continues. He says, this is in the Yisodei Torah base. Ukeshemechashev v'dvarim ha'ilu atzmam. And when you think about these very same ideas, miyad hu nirta l'achorav. Immediately you're like push backwards, take a step backwards. You're right, and you're afraid. The yifchad, and you're pachad, dread. The odeya, shehu beria kitana. You know that you're a small, or bria kitana, you're a small creature. Shefela, lowly. Afela, dark. Omed bedas kalam uta. Standing with a light and small knowledge of Nei Tamim Deos, for the complete knower. When I see the heavens, you declare, what is man that God should pay him heed? And how small, when he sees the great wisdom in the universe, the natural feeling is, well, look how small is man that God should relate to. Okay? And, right. Okay? So that's how he describes the earth. So it's like the opposite side of the coin. When a person sees the knowledge, they're drawn to the source of that knowledge. But then when you see how great God is, and then you think of yourself, you realize I'm a little nothing, right? In the face of that, and that wasn't that quote from my son, right? He saw it. He said almost the same thing. Like, all thinking of man is little, whatever, I don't know, whatever phrases. He has a lot of quotes like that. You realize how small you are. A simple person thinks he's great, right? I mean, thinks that he's great, man is great, our knowledge is great, we're so smart, we can make a television, I don't know, whatever, things like that, you know? But like a person who really gains knowledge, the more knowledge you get, the more you realize how small you really are, you know, just in the context of the greatness of the universe and the greatness of God. And that gives a person a certain, like, an awe. A person takes a step back and they feel like they're overpowered, you know, because they're like a small being before some great, you know, great God, a great universe. And so that's a flip side of the experience of it's the way Ahava affects the person when they think about themselves, because the person naturally thinks about themselves. That's just kind of the human nature. So Ahava is when you're in the moment you're forgetting about yourself and you're drawn, but then when you do, which you always do, you kind of think about yourself, or your natural feel, your feeling is one of smallness, and that's the experience of you.
Leads to
I'd say the knowledge leads to Ahava and to Yira.
Okay.
Remember, the knowledge draws you to the source of that knowledge, and the knowledge makes you realize that you're small.
Right.
So it's right?
Right.
So there are two things which both, you know, two aspects of the same knowledge, you know, and that's also going to be in accordance with the knowledge. Right? That's also going to be, because the greater a person's knowledge is, the more they realize how small they are. You know, I heard once Rebbe gave a good mashal for this one. So it's on some tape, but he says if anyone's been hiking, I know you guys are hiking mountains, or so. An example would be is like sometimes you're hiking and you look up and you're climbing up a mountain, and then you get there, you're going up, and then you feel like you're almost there, you know, you're almost at the top, you know, and then finally when you get to the top and then you look up, something they call it a false peak, whatever, you realize how there's like, you're not even near the top, you know, and you look down at those guys who are a little bit below you, and they think that they're really almost at the top. But you're the guy who's a little bit higher, and you realize how small no one's anywhere near the top. You know what I mean? So there's a similar the Nimshal, I guess, is that smaller people think that they almost figured everything out. You know, they're almost there, and they feel like feel very arrogant and egotistical, and they feel like they're great. You know, but the person who's the greatest person sees how those people don't really get it. You know, they think that they're great, but the more you see of the universe and the more you see of the wisdom that's out there, you see that you're really just a little nothing. You know, and that creates a certain type of an awe. And that's why Moshe Rabbeinu is described as Anav Me'od Mikol Adam Ashal Pnei Adama. Moshe Rabbeinu is the humblest person. So I have the greatest person and yet the humblest. Because humility stems from is a true realization of your place in the universe. So he's great compared to other people, but he realized other people don't really matter. What really matters is the ultimate picture of reality, and he's really nothing. So he's going to be the humblest person because he has the greatest knowledge. More humble than a person who has, you know, less knowledge, because a person with less knowledge thinks they have more knowledge. You with me? Okay. Question? No? Okay. So this is Yira. So I think now we're ready to get back to what we're talking about, okay? So Yira is the feeling of the awe that a person feels when they think about themselves, or should feel when they think about themselves in respect to God. Okay. So now let me read again the one of the paragraph which we read so far about tefillah. Okay. So he says like this. So he wanted to know why it is that if a person, remember that we're talking about, if a person sets a place for his tefillah, then he's a like a Malkum Kavua, he's gonna be like the student of Avraham Avinu, he's gonna be an Anav, like a humble person, a chassid. And the question is why, how does that work? Right? You set a place and then all of a sudden you get these great stuff. So he said, you should know, he says, a person who davens has to fix his attention before he davens to know before whom he stands. And to stand in yira, stand in fear, in awe. And to recognize his lowliness and the greatness of the master who he seeks. Like Chazal say, that the Chassidim Rishon, remember those guys? So they would wait an hour before they daven. They'd sit an hour before daven. And the intent is, so they'll think about his yira, and this way they'll stand in tefillah with the proper intentions. Okay? So our question is, what does this do with yira? Why is this? We all understand the idea that it's important to have kavanah when we daven, and to focus before we daven. And that's one part that she's saying, to recognize before whom we stand. But what's, he keeps throwing in this idea of yira, and you see he's talking about the same language as the Rambam, because the nimichuso, your lowness, and the greatness of God. So the question is, why is that central to tefillah? Why is that what we're focusing on? And what's the concept of these guys who would sit an hour before the davening? Like, what's this idea?
Because if you realize how small you are, like, it's like going to a king.
Yes.
And if you realize before, like, how small you are and the significance of who you're going to go speak to,
right. Mm-hmm.
It's really going to affect how you're going to approach and how you're
right.
going to daven and the kavanah there.
Right. Right. Okay, good. Good. Someone else? Yeah, you're saying a good point. So, well, how does it, your smallness, did you say that? Why is
yeah,
that?
Like your awe. Like
right, right.
If you really sat, before you daven, if you really sat down and realized, like, how small you are compared to
right.
Hashem, or, like, who you are compared to Hashem, and really,
right.
when you daven, like, you're not going to, as
right.
if you're talking to someone else,
yeah,
you're really
right.
going to put in the
yeah.
effort and
right.
Mm-hmm. It's a scary thing.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Good. Yes, yeah.
I just learned how really we're focusing on the three different parts.
Yes.
And I think when you like get that yeah, and you can each one becomes a little more intense, you can focus on it more.
Mm-hmm.
Like first you have to praise.
Right.
You can praise a lot more
right.
focusing like, oh my God,
right.
this is
mm-hmm.
so much. And then
right.
when you're asking, you're like, this is really important to me. I want
right.
to ask or present it well to something that's
right.
like, I'm so small compared to it, but
mm-hmm.
I want to maybe hope. Like, it just makes you think more, makes you,
right.
makes it more intense.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's good. Good. You guys say something? Let me ask you another question. You guys are both saying good. What's with thinking about the same question, but a further question is, what's hard? Why? What's a, like a, I guess a block to davening well, or a stumbling block, something that makes it difficult? Which somehow maybe this would be able to help us with. Like, why is it hard, and why is this important ideas to think about before davening? This idea of yira and
if it's done every day, it could become repetitive.
Okay, good. So you mean this like focuses us? Okay, good. Good. But why specifically, that's just the idea why it's important to focus. But specifically the idea of yira. What's stumbling block?
Even though it's done every day, and even though it's
right.
seen as being repetitive, it's still not a small act. It's still a
right.
very significant
thing. I understand. Because of the idea of yira. Okay, good. Good.
Like we do, like the ego gets in the way. Like you think that you're
mm-hmm.
managing your life on your own.
Right.
Right.
Right. Right. Uh-huh. Kind of doing going to work and right. Uh-huh. Thing.
But maybe that's an impediment to proper to
right.
It's not at all the mindset
mm-hmm.
you need to be
right.
executed to
a
proper
right.
Thing.
Right. Correct. Okay, good. So I think what Haley's saying goes that the problem is in tefillah is like we're asking of God, right? We're making, I guess there's a whole, Sarah's talking about the Shevach and the Makash and the Hoda, but like there, in a certain sense, tefillah is that we're requesting of God, and the way we do it is that first we have to say Shevach, and that's, you know, the appropriate way to ask of God, is we first recognize before we stand and we say Shevach, then we're in a mindset to ask, and then before we leave we give Hoda. It's a different discussion, the whole Seder, but essentially I'm talking about tefillah as like requesting of God. And the problem is that insofar as we have needs, so we have to turn to God. We have needs, God could take care of those needs, we would ask of God for those needs. Insofar as we feel self-sufficient, we feel egotistical, you know, but egotistical is a strong word, or do we just feel like we got things taken care of, kind of, you know, I know what I'm doing here. Kind of, I'm working things out. You know, I have a job. I work with my people I deal with. I know how to talk to people. I go to the doctors. I don't know, whatever it is, you know. Person has a certain sense of, you know, they have, you know, they get carried away with their own sense of empowerment or their own abilities or their own, you know, their self-centeredness and their picture of the world in line with the way they encounter the world. They get involved in their significance, and they kind of, you know, you're not involved with God all day long. You practically have to get involved with the world, and you have to encounter the world, and you have to use knowledge and try to make your way through the day and through the world using the best of your abilities. So it's only normal that a person, you get involved. That's just normal for a person to put their energy into whatever it is that they're involved with. And the problem is that when we daven, we have to take a step back and realize our place and realize our smallness and realize that, look, we're doing our best and we have, you know, we're trying in all different capacity, all different ways to make the best of our life and to be successful. But ultimately, there's much, much which is out of our control, which we don't like to think about. It's not comfortable to think about it on a daily basis because it's, you know, it's painful. But there's a much which is out of our control. And the person has to be willing to turn to God and to realize, I am small, I have needs. There's a creator who is a Shomei Tefillah, who answers the needs like that, and then he has he's a Yachol, he's able to answer the needs, and we know that there is an idea of Ashkacha, so we could formulate a request and ask of God. But it's our own feeling of our own feeling of significance which could block us from being able to see that. We are involved in our world and our regular mindset with which we carry. We have to take a time to pull ourselves away from that way of looking at the world and realize our smallness. Take a step back and think of how lowly we are, even though in our dealings we have to kind of, you know, get in the mode that we're working things out, and we have to try to. We have to take a step back and realize, wait a second, but ultimately we really are small. And there is a great God before, and like Rachel's saying, is the awesomeness of the experience of us standing before God and making a request before God. And in that mindset, if we could extricate ourselves from the normal daily mindset, then we could make our tefillah with our the proper mindset. A normal person can't be walking around all day thinking of their smallness and God's greatness. It's this high level that Rambam's talking about, you know, like guy who's in the love sick and always thinking about God, but a normal person, they get involved in their world, and as far as the world, they're important, they're whatever, and so we just get carried away with our energies, and that's part of the hard challenge of davening is to stop thinking about these things that we've been thinking about beforehand, right? I mean, we're thinking about whatever it is that we're thinking about, and then all of a sudden we start davening, and we're still thinking about those things, and we can't get our minds out of them. So the idea of these chassidim rishonim is all the stuff you're thinking about, realize its place and its perspective. Okay, you try to work things out, but you got to realize that ultimately you're a small being, and here's your chance to stand before the ultimate creator of the universe, and you got to gain perspective. And the idea of the ma'akev to the perspective, the blocker, is your own sense of self, and yira is something which breaks your sense of self, and it's important to think that and to try to pull yourself away from, to refocus on the, you know, perspective of your existence and God's existence. And that's the platform of tefillah. You, a needy being, talking to the Creator who gives needs, who supplies needs, who's a Shema Tefillah. You know, and it takes work for a person to bring it to. You have to have that feeling of neediness and that feeling of smallness. That's a proper mindset in which a person could express the feel. You know, and if you really feel that way, then you could really, I'm in need and I'm a small being before this unbelievable God who's a Lishma Tefillah. That's unbelievable. This is great. Like Rachel's saying, imagine that you're before a king and you have all kinds of problems, and you know the king, here's your chance. The king can answer all your requests. The person's going to be amazed by such an opportunity, and they're going to be all into it and expressing all their needs and their desires. But somehow we don't realize that. We kind of forget about our needs. We forget about the greatness of God, and we forget that we're needy, and we forget that God is the king who can answer these things. And the idea of Yira is before the davening, focus on that. Take a step back. And they took an hour, because you think, what do they do for an hour? But there's an idea of, I don't know if we could do this, but there's an idea, you can imagine removing your emotions from your world and from like kind of refocusing on, you know, on true ideas. And you know, your experience, daily experiences in a certain sense could be corrupting. Could draw you to you know, to false realities. So there's an idea of refocusing on truth. So perhaps that's what's going on here. But we're still, this is his first paragraph, which is his intro. This is where he's going to help us try to understand why having a makom kavua is important. Right? We haven't yet read that. So far he's just talking about the importance of yira and focus and tefillah. So I guess we'll try next week. Or next time, or I guess next week should be good, right? To go further. So, if a person, if any of you want to look at this, it's a small piece. It's page 12 in Zion. If anyone, your father said he doesn't have it?
I don't think so.
Okay. He's aware of what it is. So, I'm just saying, so Ayala mentions a good point that a person feels in tefillah sometimes that they have powers. They ask of God, and God's going to answer them. Right, that's like almost like I'm pushing the buttons right, or I have a magical power. I say it in the right way, and God's gonna listen to me because I asked it. So that's also Yira counters that. Is a person realizes their smallness, and a person really has a sense of Yira, they realize it just doesn't work that way. You can't just you're a small being and you're asking, but you're small, and you're hoping for the best, but you don't. It kind of could help prevent the person from having that approach. Okay, that's very good. Yeah, it's an additional point. It compliments what we said already.